In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show, how to maximize ketosis? Do power poses really work? How to detox your home? Should you have sex before competition? And much more.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power. Speed. Mobility. Balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
So I've officially had way too much caffeine this morning, so I'm going to just try to stay calm through this entire thing. Deep breaths.
Really? How much caffeine have you had?
I've had two enormous cups of coffee, and I took a Neuromaster. I don't know if you've tried those.
Neuromaster?
Yeah, it's a supplement that's supposed to increase BDNF, but it does so by kicking in a lot of caffeine into your system.
It's supposed to increase your BDNF, yeah. your brain-derived neurotrophic factor? See, I didn't even take Neuromaster, and I was able to just spit that out.
There you
out.
Go. I can't spit it out because my tongue will freak out halfway through the sentence.
That's a great name, Neuromaster. I've never heard of this stuff. I'll have to look into it.
It's a bulletproof thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Well, there we go. Nice little shout out for Neuromaster.
Well, if you want to get hepped up on caffeine, that is.
Does it have a lot of caffeine in it?
No, I think it's only 25 milligrams. I think it's just on top of the two huge cups of coffee I've had, too, that it's causing a problem.
Now, isn't that the stuff that has like a coffee fruit extract?
Yes, it is.
Okay, interesting. I'm releasing a podcast episode in a couple of weeks with a guy named Darren Olean, I think is the last name. He wrote a book about all these superfoods that he hunts down, and he talked a lot about this coffee fruit extract as being more of like a longevity hack. That's interesting.
Nice.
Well, I am not hyped up. I'm quite calm because I've got a special blend diffusing in my office right now. I'm blending this stuff called, my office smells amazing, Purification. It is, let me see, I'm looking at the label here. It's citronella oil, rosemary oil, which is good for memory, by the way, nice. Lemongrass oil, tea tree leaf oil, so I'm not going to get MRSA while I'm talking to you.
Thank goodness, not again anyway.
Lavender oil and myrtle oil.
The hell
oil? I think it comes from my great aunt Myrtle.
That's what I was thinking.
And her husband Clyde, who grow myrtle trees. Okay, I don't really have an aunt named Myrtle. This is degrading pretty quickly. We should jump into the news flashes.
Let's do it, please.
News flashes.
In case you haven't guessed, it's BenGreenfieldFitness.com/374. For all of this good stuff.
Yeah, we've got plenty. As a matter of fact, before we jump into a few really interesting articles that I found this week, you know, a lot of time I'm constantly, you know, testing and trying and tweaking all these different things that I occasionally will throw up on, you know, Snapchat or Instagram.
You occasionally throw up on?
I occasionally throw up on Snapchat. I throw up a lot on Snapchat.
That's what it's for.
Call my post digital barf. Anyways, though, I have certain things, certain books that I read, you know, things that I try, devices, etc., that I don't get a chance to talk about too much on the show just because there's so much. So I wanted to do a quick lightning round about a few things for people to try that I think will make their lives better. It made my life better this month. What do you think, Brock?
Do it.
Okay. Here we go.
Go.
Number one, an oldie but a goodie. It's a book by a guy named Bob Cooley. It's called Genius of Flexibility. And by the way, I'm going to put a link for each of these lightning flash things that I discuss over in the show notes at BenGreenfieldFitness.com/374. So Genius of Flexibility, it's all based around resistance stretching. And I don't know if it's just a miracle or really good glue, but I've been taking that book with me into the sauna and doing what is called resistance stretching, which is a form of like body weight training and stretching. And my body feels freaking fantastic every time I do one of these sessions. So Check out that book, Genius of Flexibility. And it's really interesting because different poses are supposed to also address, this sounds kind of woo, but like certain emotions or certain, you know, chakras or meridians in your body. So it's not just stretching, it's stretching plus woo. So Genius of Flexibility by Bob Cooley.
I totally buy that. Yes. I cry all the time when I'm stretching. Mm-hmm. It happens a lot.
You should have that looked into. I also have another book, two other books actually, that I read this month that I think folks will really enjoy. One's a quite short read, but kind of up there with Katie Bowman, a great biomechanist who we're releasing a podcast with this Saturday, as a matter of fact. But this lady is right up there with Katie Bowman in terms of really doing a great job discussing biomechanics of, in this case, the foot and how to get what is called barefoot strong. Some of the exercises in that book I have been doing while I've been brushing my teeth, while I've been standing in line, while I've been podcasting. It's an extremely short read. I'll bet most listeners could get through it in like an hour, but it's excellent. And I'm going to get her on the show too. But in the meantime, snag her a book. It's very good. It's called Barefoot Strong, Dr. Emily Splitchell.
Cool. Hey, would that help my plantar fasciitis? I'm having some trouble with it right now.
A ton. Yes. Any foot related. As a matter of fact, she talks a lot about, you know, how it addresses hip and knee and ankle biomechanics as well. So Barefoot Strong.
Done.
Another training book that I recently read that I really enjoyed that I actually had the opportunity to write the foreword for because I liked it so much. It's called NeuroGrips, the NeuroGrip program. It's by a former podcast guest, John Bruni. And he makes these things called NeuroGrips that I now travel with. They're these little like push-up handles that allow you to do like push-ups, balancing exercises. But essentially what happens is when you hold these handles and you're doing a push-up or a plank, or you can also attach an elastic band to them and use them for any number of body weight exercises as well, it turns on every single muscle in your shoulders, your arms, your core. And his new book has like a whole training program on how to use these things. So if you like to toy around with small, portable, but highly effective exercise equipment, this NeuroGrips book and the NeuroGrips Grips by former podcast guest John Bruni. Amazing. So
nice.
Yeah, Genius of Flexibility, Barefoot Strong book, and the NeuroGrips book. I'll link to all those in the show notes. And then biohacks. One other thing before, a few little biohacks I've been using. One, a device for massaging your psoas called the PSO. Mm. These folks sent it to me. It showed up at my front door. I thought it was yet another, you know, cheapo made in China massage therapy device that was, you know, two balls taped together or some other play on a stick, which,
hey, take it easy on China.
Everybody and their mom is doing these days. Sorry, Taiwan. No. Let's say Taiwan.
yeah, that's better. Yeah,
that's much better. So it's a device for massaging your psoas, which is the very tender area on either side of the front of your hips. That's actually quite difficult to get into with a foam roller or even really in a very efficient way, like a lacrosse ball or something like that. You kind of like lay over this device and just make love to it. And it massages your psoas. And it hurts so good. But when you stand up, it's amazing in terms of like the release that it gives to your hips. And it's even like kind of reset my SI joints. It's called a PSO device.
If that's what you think making love is, I need to talk to your wife.
Yeah, well, you know, if you free up your psoas, you'll technically be a better lovemaker. So
Perhaps. There's
that. And then three last things, or four last things. A video about Egoscue training. Egoscue is a really cool way to align your body, to work on your posture. And in my case, I started doing this when I threw out my back 2 weeks ago, flipping a tire in preparation for the upcoming Spartan World Championships. I've been hobbling around like an old man for the last couple of weeks, but slowly rehabbing myself using things like that psoas massage device and using things like this Egoscue video that I'll link to in the show notes. It's just five different very short exercises that, again, kind of like the barefoot book you can do while you're standing in line, while you're, you know, whatever, you know, on work breaks, you know, if you do the whole Pomodoro thing. But
I've been doing it while I make my coffee in the morning. Mm-hmm. It's perfect timing for that.
There you go. And we all know now that you make a lot of that.
I make a lot of coffee.
So check out the video. It's a very short video. You'll memorize it after watching it a couple times. Kind of cool thing to have in your back pocket for quick, like, standing exercises. You can do almost like power poses, which we're talking about later on in today's show. But it's called Egoscue, Egoscue. So check that out. And then finally, three devices I've been using that I think folks should look into. One is called a Circadia, C-I-R-C-A-D-I-A. It is two electrodes. One goes on one side of your ear. One goes on the opposite ear. And it induces a significant drop in plasma cortisol and salivary cortisol based on clinical studies that they've done on this thing, and also increases dopamine and serotonin. So what its use is, as the name would imply, Circadia, would be anytime you need to like settle down your body, de-stress, and take a nap or get to sleep or just check out for a little while, you flip this thing on for about 20 minutes. And it's amazing. It's one of the only like clinically acceptable self electroshock head devices that exists out there. And
that sounds terrifying.
I've been using it, especially when I travel, because I have a hard time napping sometimes when I travel. Airplanes too, it works really well, as long as you can resist the embarrassment from the strange looks that your seatmate will give you as you attach electrodes to your skull. Anyways, though, that's called the Circadia. Also, another couple of devices I've been using. One is called a Nano-V, and this is a little bit more expensive, but it's an extremely cool new method for DNA repair and for regeneration of tissue and cellular membranes.
Yeah, we talked about this one like a month ago.
I think we briefly brought it up. Yeah, and yeah. It's like this little device that I have sitting on my desk. And it humidifies the air, but at the same time, literally exposes the air to specific frequencies that create a small amount of reactive oxygen species that, when you breathe them in, jumpstart your body's own oxidative stress repair mechanisms. And you feel, I know you've used this before too, Brock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You feel very similar to if you'd been like walking along the beach or like walking through the forest after it's rained. Like, it's kind of that same sensation, like just a clear head. And so I've been using that about 30 minutes a day just while I'm typing away on at my desk. So
you got to use it a lot, because that thing is not cheap.
Yeah, that one's a little bit more expensive, as is the other one that I've been using quite a bit, called a Live O2. And again, these are more biohacks. I don't want to scare everybody away thinking you got to buy all this expensive stuff to live a fulfilled life. But these are just cool things I've been using, because a lot of stuff shows up on my doorstep, or I try or I buy and it doesn't work. And everything I'm talking about right now does. It's called a Live O2. So a Live O2, and again, I have links and I have discount codes for most of these things in the show notes. But the Live O2 is this like bag on a stand that you put next to any exercise device, like a bike or an elliptical trainer or a treadmill, or you could just put it next to a yoga mat and do bodyweight exercises while wearing the mask. But it allows you to, with the flip of a switch and this little handheld remote, go from like very low amounts of oxygen, same as if you were training on top of a mountain, up to very high amounts of oxygen, as in 100%. So you switch back and forth from vasoconstriction to vasodilation, and it comes with a bunch of protocols, like a protocol for clearing the head and a protocol for reducing inflammation and a protocol for increasing VO2 max or for increasing mitochondrial density. And it's a very cool device. I discovered it at Paleo FX last year and was able to ride the bike and use it. And they sent me one to try, and it's amazing. And so,
and you never gave it back.
I never gave it back. I hope they don't listen in, because it's still sitting in my office. I hope they don't ask for it back, because I love it. It's something I've been using a couple of times a week now. Those are just a few little things I wanted to mention to folks, and I'll put links over in the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/374. But that's my high horse of biohacks and books and little techniques I've been messing around with lately.
Beautiful.
So apparently I need better things to do. I wanted to talk about three articles that I recently found. One, speaking of low back pain, was a really great article. Basically, the title of it is A Comprehensive Guide to the New Science of Treating Low Back Pain. And what they dive into is a review of 80 plus studies. And this one's near and dear to my heart, because like I mentioned, I just threw out my back so badly that probably during Spartan World Championships, when I run past the tire flip, which seems to be getting heavier in every race, like I think they've got it up to like 400 pounds or something like that now.
Whoa,
I'm
really?
Probably just going to run past the tire and start doing burpees, because the last thing I want to do is throw out my back right in the middle of the race, unfortunately. So If you see me be doing...
Do they dock points for that?
No. What happens is if you can't flip the tire, you got to do 30 burpees, right?
And that's it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. All. So, right. Which is a long... Huh. Consider it takes 2 minutes to do 30 burpees and maybe 45 seconds to flip the tire once, then turn around and flip it again. Like, because it takes a little while to get underneath the tire, deadlift that amount of weight. Like, it's slow going. It's not like a flip like it used to be in those races. So... I know you'll be there also at Spartan World Championships, Brock.
I will.
And by the way, for those of you listening in, we're going to be churning out some amazing podcasts because Joe DeSena, the CEO of Spartan, is flying in some of the top podcasters on the planet, along with a bunch of fitness celebrities and athletes. And he's calling it PodFest. And Brock and I are going to be there churning out videos and photos and audios and all sorts of cool stuff for you guys. So that's coming up quite soon. That's coming up next week. But
yeah, damn.
Yeah. Anyways, though, we digress. So this article on low back pain kind of goes into this concept that we spend, you know, $90 billion a year on back pain. But frankly, you know, from spinal surgery to opioid based painkillers, which are an epidemic now in the U.S., according to dear Mr. Dr. Trump. Is he a doctor? I think he's a doctor.
Oh, God.
President, though. Steroid injections, all of those have been proven to be ineffective in a majority of cases, and of course downright harmful in the case of some things like opioid painkillers or, you know, spinal surgery. So they published a randomized controlled trial on low back pain, and they found most of these things to be ineffective. But at the same time, there are a growing number of alternative therapies for chronic back pain that have been proven now to be highly effective. And currently, the American College of Physicians, as of 2017, is now advising back doctors and patients or anybody who have low back pain to try some of these non-drug-based therapies, you know, like acupuncture or Tai Chi or yoga, you know, and things like the Egoscu exercises that I was just talking about that would fall into that category. You know, even things like spinal manipulation are discussed in the article. And it just is a great little article that finishes with what is called the McGill Big Three Back Exercises. The McGill Big Three Back Exercises. So this spine biomechanic named Dr. Stu McGill, who I'm actually interviewing next month for the show, and he's got three exercises on there for people who have low back pain. They're great three exercises. I've been doing them in the morning.
Really simple.
So simple. One's called the curl up, and there's great illustrations in the article. So go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/374 and go check out especially this quick little infographic. But it's got one's called a curl up. Which is like almost like a crunch with your hands underneath your low back. One is called a bird dog, which is where you reach forward with your left arm, right leg. Right arm, left leg, and extend your body. And then one is just a basic side bridge. But as a matter of fact, as simple as that may seem, just doing those three exercises every day can be enormous for strengthening the back and then banishing back pain. I know it sounds simple and not quite as complex as some of the expensive biohacks I was just talking about earlier, but sometimes simplicity counts. So
it's true.
It's a great article if your back hurts. Or if anybody you know has a hurting back, have them go read it. It's a really good one.
It is, yeah.
And then a couple of things that don't really have much to do with fitness per se, but articles that I really appreciated and enjoyed. One was about how to retain more from the books that you read. And, you know, I just posted on bengreenfieldfitness.com a book review from a recent book that I read called Healing is Voltage, which is just kind of about like how the human body is a battery and how to ensure that the cell membranes are kept at the correct electrochemical gradient to allow for normal cell metabolism. And, you know, I get into everything from iodine to sulfate to pulsed electromagnetic field therapy and a whole bunch of other things I learned from that particular book. But I read a book a day. That's like my rule. I was at dinner with my wife last night and commenting how sometimes I almost wish I didn't have that rule, because even at the end of the day, if I haven't finished my book, you know, I occasionally will avoid chatting with my wife about her day, and instead I'll just dive into finishing the book I was supposed to finish. So anyways, I read a book a day, and in that article I get into, you know, some of my speed reading techniques and how I get things out of books. You can go read that article just at bengreenfieldfitness.com. You can see there kind of like a feed of all the articles that I write each week. But this particular article goes into how to retain more from the books you read in five simple steps. Did you have a chance to check this article out, Brock?
I did. I honestly didn't get a lot from it. Maybe okay. because I didn't apply Probably, any of the techniques.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you didn't apply any of the techniques.
No, it's actually really cool. I hadn't thought of many of these.
Yeah, and briefly, but go read the article. One is called Have a Purpose for Reading. See yourself as a teacher, meaning as you read, imagine that you would have to teach that knowledge.
Yeah, I like that one. That's my favorite.
It's great. Yeah. Number three is to highlight and make mental connections, meaning that you basically have a highlighter and a pen on hand when you're actually reading, which I always do, along with dirty fingernails for folding over pages. I visualize and imagine, and it encourages people to visualize and imagine. So what that means is that as you are reading, you visualize yourself having a conversation with the author, like an imaginary conversation about the things that you're reading. So that one's interesting. And then finally, immediately apply one piece of new knowledge. And that's something that I also do. I always have, you know, like the Barefoot book I was talking about, right? Like as soon as I finished that book, I set it down. I had my pen, I had my highlighter. I went through the sections I highlighted, and I actually tried the next morning all those exercises from the book, right? So it was cementing that knowledge in my mind. And, you know, having read a book a day for, gosh, almost 7 years now, and used a lot of these techniques, you know, it's really allowed me to, I think, progress as a human, right? To become kind of like a more complete human, able to do a variety of different things, because I'm not just reading the books, but I'm practicing what's in the books. So it's a great article. It's on medium.com. And then finally, my friend Ryan Holiday. I don't know if you've read any of his books, like Trust Me, I'm Lying or Obstacle is the Way.
I have not, no.
Yeah, he's a really great author. And what he does is for 5 years in a row, he's written this piece for a website called thoughtcatalog.com, which is a great website. But it reflects on what he's learned in the past year. And he's kind of a young guy. He just turned 30, but he's I think wise beyond his years in terms of his writing. And the title of this article is How to Live a Full Life and Leave Nothing on the Table by 30 Years Old. And he goes into a whole host of tactics. I believe there's 40 different tactics for living a full life. I think it's well worth a read. Like, for example, one is when you're looking at a job or a career, to not ask what will pay the most, but what will teach you the most. Because what ultimately what'd you say?
I'm just saying meh, because that's not very groundbreaking. It's like every self-help book in the world has said that.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I'm scrolling through the list right here, and I'm kind of yawning.
Well, no, I mean, look at it this way. Like, one is hell yes or hell no is too simple, right? There's that book, The 50th Law, which is all about if it's not a hell yes, don't do it. But what he says is most of the best decisions I made would have failed that test. I was scared. I had doubts. I didn't know if it was what I really wanted. Life is complicated, and life decisions are about weighing the odds, not black and white certainties. And I think that's good advice. I mean, sometimes it is. Sometimes you don't know the answer right away. Sometimes depending on your gut isn't the answer, even though you do hear that a lot these days, like trust your gut. If it's a hell yes, do it. If not, walk away. Whereas I think sometimes it can be a little bit more complex than that. Another one that he has that's interesting. I know you're not super impressed.
I'm not so far. I'm still scrolling.
Drive across the United States. He says no one should die before they have done this.
Right, so you can see all the billboards selling you stuff on the freeways?
Because America is apparently an amazing country to drive across.
All about selling you stuff while you're driving?
Yes, put all your screaming children and your loved one in an RV and drive across the country, staying at cheap motels along the way. It'll change your life forever.
Eating at Burger King.
Right. Let me give you one more. Avoid.
I'll try not to poo-poo it.
Avoid competition. Sometimes competition makes you better, but more often than not, it just eats up resources. Don't spend precious years of your life in trench warfare or in a stalemate. Go where there is no competition. Seek out the blue oceans. That's a great book, by the way, The Blue Ocean Strategy. The best way to do that, be you, do only the things you can do. I think sometimes we get caught up in everything from Twitter wars to, you know, forum blog post trolling to just arguing and trying to be right when in fact, sometimes avoiding competition can allow you to get more deep work done. So yeah, anyways,
I'll go with that one. I sort of took it as like, don't be a me too sort of thing. Like if you're starting a business, don't start it based on, hey, that guy had a good idea, I'm going to do that too.
Yeah.
Do something different.
Yeah.
Find a new niche.
Well, as much as you hated the article, Brock, I still recommend everybody go read it. So I'll
Go read it by all means. Like, just, it's not a bad article. I just didn't, it didn't change my life.
That's you're such a hater.
Yeah, I am.
Listener Q&A.
Hi, Ben. I just listened to your podcast of January 18th with Dr. Dominic D'Agostino. He states that BCAAs and MCTs enhance the synergistic effect of exogenous ketones, if I understood correctly. And I gather that there are some ketone salts that have these supplements already added to them. I take ketone salts with just potassium added. I wondered if I could get the added benefit of BCAAs and MCTs by mixing my own concoction, or even adding ketone salts to a protein powder and then adding some MCTs in the form of coconut oil. That would certainly enhance the taste, but would it do anything to the effectiveness of the ketone salts, either diminishing it or enhancing it? Thanks.
That Dom D'Agostino is one smart man.
Smart man. He's a strong man too. He can deadlift a lot of weight.
He's a very large man.
Yeah, he can deadlift a lot of weight, fasted, in ketosis. Because he's cracked the code. You know, I've chatted with him a few times on the podcast, and that's certainly one thing that we got into, how when you consume medium-chain triglycerides along with ketones, what it can do it can almost like increase the effectiveness of the ketones by causing the liver to produce even more ketones. And that's why when you look at a lot of supplement companies these days that are making like these exogenous ketones that you would drink or that would be in powder form. And they're actually getting very tasty. You know, they used to taste like ass, and now they taste like chocolate ice cream or lemon sorbet. You know, with just a hint of ass. That's right. Or a hint of ass later on if you overdo it, especially the ones with the MCT powder in them. But yeah, they'll add MCT powder, for example, to enhance the effectiveness of said ketones. And so that's certainly one thing that would be, even if you don't get one of those blends that has MCTs or medium chain triglycerides in it, you can actually enhance the effects of it by getting your hands on some MCT powder, which is pretty easy to find, or MCT oil, and actually taking those along with the ketones, like in a smoothie or stirring them into a cup. Now, Margo also asks about BCAAs and whether those would be a good addition. And I would actually say no to that. And you know, a lot of people get into this whole BCAAs thing, but in fact, there's kind of a problem, in my opinion, with branched chain amino acids. For example, those are just three amino acids, right? Leucine and isoleucine and valine. And sure, when you increase your blood levels of amino acids, you do indeed stave off things like central nervous system fatigue, right? Central nervous system fatigue can often set in, and it's not bonking or running out of carbohydrates or sugar, as a lot of people think that it is. But in many cases, it's when your blood levels of amino acids become very low. Tryptophan is able to cross the blood-brain barrier and make you kind of sleepy during exercise. And the idea is that by maintaining higher blood levels of amino acids during exercise, you are able to take on fewer carbohydrates while enhancing your ability to not have to break down lean muscle and keeping this tryptophan from crossing the blood-brain barrier. Now, one of the issues with BCAAs is, first of all, if you were to take those on like an empty, or not an empty stomach, but if you take those at rest, right, when you're not exercising, what they've shown is that circulating levels of BCAAs, and there's a really compelling study about this done in 2015, can predict the development of type 2 diabetes, and plasma levels of BCAAs can actually cause insulin resistance and spike your blood glucose. And so there's some metabolic effects when you jack up your amino acid levels with just these three amino acids. Now, if you were going to take amino acids, what you should instead consider doing is taking a whole amino acid source. And that's important for two reasons. Not only because if you're using something like amino acids at rest, the branched chain amino acids can cause some metabolic issues, but also the essential amino acids or whole amino acids can allow you in a much more efficient way compared to BCAAs to do things like stave off muscle catabolism, because it's every amino acid or all your essential, you know, your nine essential amino acids, rather than just three amino acids. It's also
like eating a steak.
It also includes all the BCAAs. So basically what happens is you get all the benefits of the BCAAs. However, there's lower levels of leucine, so you don't get the insulin resistance setting in. And then you get all the benefits of like the anabolic effect of having, you know, threonine and valine and phenylalanine and tryptophan and isoleucine and methionine in the correct ratios rather than just leucine and isoleucine and valine. Can I think of any other words to say that end with ine, do you think?
Vaseline.
Yes, we'll throw that in there as an essential amino acid.
So
I recommend if you're going to combine an amino acid with something like ketones or ketosis, you use essential amino acids rather than branched chain amino acids, especially if this is going to be something that you do for the purposes of exercise. It's even more important. So, yes, amino acids, but in the form of essential amino acids, yes, MCT oil or MCT powder. Another thing I would consider would be caffeine. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago in a podcast about how
caffeine makes everything
when
better.
When you consume caffeine, it's not as much as Brock does. It increases plasma ketones. And so when you consume caffeine on like a ketogenic diet, you enhance not only the ketogenic effect of medium chain triglycerides in this study, but also the effect of the exogenous ketones that you might be consuming. So that's another strategy would be to use caffeine. So those would be kind of like your top three, right? Like caffeine, essential amino acids, and then some type of a medium chain triglyceride source. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Okay, cool.
I like it.
So that all being said, I did want to I didn't mention this in the introduction, but I do have this this little device that I've been using that's fascinating. And it allows you to measure your level of ketosis by measuring the acetone in your exhaled breath, which it's basically this sensor that detects acetone in your breath. You just, you know, you breathe in, then you blow out into this device, almost like you were testing your blood alcohol levels. And not only can it analyze the acetone in your breath, and they've got a correlation algorithm that approximates your blood ketone levels based on your breath acetone levels, but it also is able to measure the rate at which you are metabolizing fats. And so you can see exactly how many, you know, pound, like I measured it this morning, and you know, based on my metabolism this morning and my state of fat burning, I am apparently going to, over the course of today, burn 0.16 pounds of fat as fuel based on the level of ketosis that I'm in. So it's a fascinating device, and it's called a Level, L-E-V-L. I will put a link to it in the show notes, but it's a very, very cool little device that again, is just a quick way without having to prick your finger or bleed to measure your level of ketosis. And there's a lot of people that kind of raise an eyebrow about whether or not you can correlate breath acetone measurements to blood ketone measurements. But it's looking like there's actually a pretty good relationship between breath acetone and the ability to be able to measure the amount of fat that you're burning, and also the ability to be able to approximate your levels of ketosis. So there you have it, a little device you can add into your protocol, Margot.
Hey, Ben, I just had a question. When you go and do public speaking, or like, for example, when you did your TED Talk and when you have to present in front of people, what are some strategies you use to get into that kind of presenter mode? Any kind of tricks you do? Do you do some type of breathing exercises? What kind of mental preparation do you do? Anything would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, Ben. Love the show.
I know you do a lot more presenting than I do, but my techniques for getting ready to do a presentation usually involve beer.
Yes.
I'm guessing yours do as well.
Beer. You know, I did this when I interviewed the folks at Human Garage. We both did a shot of Jaeger prior to the podcast, and it actually was a fantastic podcast, and the gentleman who gave it to me swears by it for decreasing sympathetic nervous system activity, and that's kind of a no-brainer because we all know alcohol is a downer. However, it's very seldom that I'll shoot back whiskey or Jägermeister or Vodka.
I did notice you did seem a lot more charming and good looking during that interview.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. No problem. Anyways, though, this whole idea behind power posing, guess what? It's
bunk.
So, and it's a perfect example of a claim that's made that gets, that's really based on flawed science. There's this gal named Amy Cuddy, who is famous for a TED Talk, which is among the most popular TED Talks of all time. Yeah. And now even a book she wrote on the back end of that TED Talk that proposes that a person can, by assuming two simple one-minute poses, embody power and instantly become more powerful and get in a surge of hormones and increase their confidence. And
we should clarify, though. Yeah. Well, just before you get into what she cites, is that the part that was debunked was the fact that the hormone levels were not affected. The actual cognitive effects of it were not debunked. Like, people actually were feeling much more powerful. There was just no physiological response.
Well, in the paper from 2010, what they report on is they say that the results of that study confirm their prediction that a nonverbal display, aka a power pose, would cause neuroendocrine and behavioral changes, particularly elevations in testosterone, decreases in cortisol, and increased feelings of power and tolerance for risk, whereas people who didn't power pose exhibited the opposite pattern. And so, you know, people took this and ran with it for a while, and power posing became very popular. But then in a paper that was published in 2015, in which an outside team of researchers using a sample population that was five times larger than the original group found absolutely zero effect to power posing when it came to that same hormonal effect. They actually, this was something called p-hacking, which is also known as the garden of forking paths in statistical science, where they're able to report what seems to be an impressively large effect, but the variation is so high that it's really not statistically significant. It can all be ascribed to just like chance fluctuation. So there isn't a hormonal effect. You can't increase your testosterone, it would appear, with any type of power pose. Although at the same time, as you've just alluded to, Brock, it may actually make you feel more confident. You know, when I interviewed Jordan Harbinger from The Art of Charm, he has like the door frame technique where before you walk into a room, you do a special pose to like open up your shoulders and allow you to feel more confident. So that's certainly something that you could try. But I, you know, Kyle asked about what I do. I don't really have a power pose that I do at all. I don't. It's just not something I've ever done. I'm not flexing. Well, when I was a bodybuilder, I guess I did. I would flex backstage.
Totally.
Get my pump.
But that
on.
Had more to do with your calves.
Oh, dude, when I was bodybuilding, you'd be backstage like doing pull-ups and curl. You do everything you like what you do before a date when you're, you know, in high school. You crank out your 50 push-ups before you walk out the door so you look nice and ripped for your date. It's basically bodybuilding.
When I was like dancing, we did exactly the same thing before we went on stage.
Yeah exactly.
Because you want to look as swole as you can.
Yeah, swole. So I however, no longer do that when I public speak, but there are a couple things that I do. One is that there is a technique called box breathing, and this is one I picked up from Commander Mark Devine of the Navy SEALs.
Hoo-ah.
And it's very simple, but if I'm a little bit nervous before I go on stage, I literally just do one single minute of four count in, a four count hold, four count out, four count hold, and I'll occasionally instead do alternate nostril breathing, which is very similar, right? You breathe in through your right nose, out through your left nose.
That's Hillary Clinton.
I'm sorry, you're right. Not many people have a right nose and a left nose. And through your right nostril, out through your left nostril, and then vice versa. And really, that's it. And then I get up there and I talk. Now, that being said, you know, I've been stage speaking since I was, like, my parents put me in speech and debate classes and, like, on stage speaking and summer theater and acting from the time I was 7 years old. I was on the speech and debate team in college. So I've kind of like always been a little bit comfortable getting on stage just because I did it from such an early age. But there are a couple of books that I read that really helped me out as well. For example, I am an introvert. And there is a book by Susan Cain called The Power of Introverts. And in that book, she discusses how it's a myth that you need to be an extrovert to be a powerful stage speaker. And instead, as a guy named Malcolm Gladwell, who's a fascinating author, also gets into speaking isn't an act of extroversion. It's a performance. And so when I get on stage, I look at it the same way as when I used to be, you know, like I acted in Pride and Prejudice and in college theater. And another one was Arsenic and Old Lace. A couple of those I had like, you know, more starring roles in, right? Like I was the villain in Arsenic and Old Lace. And I was I was one of the main army captains in Pride and Prejudice. And, just about every theater production I've been in, I've had some kind of a role where I've had to speak, I've had to talk. And when I get up on stage, I go into that same mode, right? I am an actor when I step up there. And as long as I'm able to say, okay, you know, Ben is now the intelligent and informed, hacker, nutritionist, you know, longevity expert, whatever
who's going to get up there.
Right.
Yourself.
Like that is my character. And I'm not saying be fake, but at the same time, you have to think of it, especially if you're introverted, more like a performance where you're going into a new persona as soon as your feet touch stage and you stay in that persona until you get off stage. Then you go curl up in a fetal position and suck your thumb and hide from people. But ultimately, the Power of Introvert is a really good book that kind of goes into more detail about what I've just highlighted. And then another really good one, because I tend to use slides when I speak. But if anyone's seen me speak, and in most cases, and this is occurring on an increasingly more frequent basis, my slides are just photos with like maybe two or three words on the photo and very few slides. And the simpler that you keep your slides, the fewer the words, the bigger the pictures, and the fewer the slides, the more effective and striking your presentation can be versus having a bunch of slides and just, this is one thing that annoys the hell out of me when I'm sitting in a class when someone has all the slides and they're just reading the words.
Just read it.
Like, why didn't you just email these slides to me and save me a plane ticket and a hotel stay and the conference fee, right?
Seriously.
So when I prepare a presentation in PowerPoint, mostly I just go with photos and a few words because it accomplishes two things. Number one, it keeps people locked in because they have to listen to you rather than just seeing a bunch of words read, reading through that slide, and then tuning out as you go through that slide. Number two is it forces you to really learn your material and to know what you're talking about because you know you're just kind of like speaking off of photos and very few words. And when I prepare a PowerPoint presentation, sure, in the presentation itself, I have the notes section that I'll use in PowerPoint where I'll actually have my notes written to me and I can study those before I get up on stage. But once I'm up on stage, I don't have access to those notes anymore that I have associated with each slide. And then it's just the pictures and the very few words. And I learned this from a good book called Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs. Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs. It was one of the better books I've ever read on presenting and on, you know, making PowerPoints and on slides. And
I believe the first chapter of that book is about wearing jeans, sneakers, and a turtleneck.
Exactly, which is why you always see me in a black turtleneck these days. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that's my favorite thing to wear when I actually do put on a shirt. So there you go, Kyle. Those are a few of the things I'd look into. Power of Introverts by Susan Cain. Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs by, I believe, Steve Jobs. And then the box breathing. And then, by the way, that Egoscue video that I mentioned earlier in today's podcast, apparently that's kind of similar to what Tony Robbins does when he steps on stage. From what I understand is he uses something very much like this Egoscue video that I mentioned. So but
Brian Bradley's in Tony Robbins' inner circle, I believe. He like goes around and does presentations with him.
Is that the guy in this Egoscue video?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know his name. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, we should get him on the podcast. He's a really cool guy.
Yeah, sounds cool. All right. We'll do it. Anyways, though, so those are a few of my recommendations, Kyle, and I'll link to those books for you, as well as a really cool little box breathing app that will teach you how to box breathe effectively if you do need an app to get yourself to do a four count in, four count hold, four count out, and four count hold. If you need an app to walk you through that, because I think it'd be impossible to breathe without an app. then
exactly. You can't do anything without an app.
Go to the show notes and grab the app too.
And grab a turtleneck.
Hey guys, my question is regarding DIY projects. Whether you're painting part of your house, doing some minor plumbing, gluing something together, all these different products tend to, you go to Home Depot or Lowe's, tend to have a lot of toxic compounds. Do you do these DIY projects and try to find the lowest toxin products, like a low VOC paint or something that doesn't have any toxins in it? Do you contract it out to someone else so you don't have to touch it? What do you do? Thanks, guys. Really appreciate the podcast.
You know, I just wear a tinfoil hat.
Well, of course.
Pretty sure I'm good to go. I think that protects you against everything.
Protects your noggin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First of all, I'm not a DIYer. I don't do a lot of DIY projects. My wife does a lot of that stuff. I do get concerned about her sometimes. Like, she does a good job, you know, going outside to glue things and to do all her painting. And she's restoring a camper right now. And she's out there with, you know, the masks that you see people wearing when they're on airplanes. And she probably gets exposed to more toxins than I do. You know, my freaking office, I've got, like, you know, these essential oils diffusing, and I've got this fancy little, like, HEPA air filter called an air doctor, which just, you know, sweeps all the air in my office extremely efficiently. I don't get exposed to that much, but there are some definite things that you should do if you're wanting to kind of ensure that you don't get exposed to many toxins while you're cleaning things up. So a few of the recommendations that I have, one would be when it comes to things like fabrics, you know, couches, chairs, things along those lines. You know, this would be less of a DIY project, but more of just a rule for you when you're adding furniture to your home, is you want to look for something called PBDEs. PBDEs, these are called polybrominated diphenyl ethers. And they're essentially flame retardants, right, to keep things from burning down. So if your house catches on fire, you're screwed. But otherwise, you're going to be very, very healthy, because these PBDEs can accumulate in your body over time. And they can act very similar to estrogen. So you would want to, you know, there are furniture companies out there that produce low PBDE furniture that are toxin-free, including, like, the glue that holds the wood together to the cushion fabric. So look for PBDE furniture, PBDE-free furniture, if you're adding furniture. For paints, you know, a traditional latex paint is going to have chemicals like ethylene glycol and butoxyethanol. And those will continue to seep into your home long after the walls dry. But you could use, for example, an all-natural paint. Like, have you ever heard of milk paint, Brock?
No. No, is it actually made out of milk?
Yeah, it's made out of milk protein and minerals. And crazy. So you can find very biodegradable, toxin-free paints like this. But look up something like milk paint, you know, for things like painting projects. For wood, obviously, I think many of us know that the sealants and the stains and the glues used on wood and cupboards and wood floors, those outgas. They outgas what are called volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, and those evaporate at room temperature and can spew a lot of toxic molecules into the air. And if you're using, like, what's called a pressed wood product, that's kind of a double whammy, because those also emit what's called formaldehyde, which is a human carcinogen. It's pleasant as it smells. You can get what are called plant-based wood finishes, and you can also get water-based stains. And in many cases, both plant-based wood finishes, although some plant-based wood finishes aren't always toxin-free, most water-based stains are. And you can also get, when you're looking at wood, what's called formaldehyde-free wood. So for stains, use a water-based stain. For a paint, use, like, a milk-based paint. And those would be a couple of things you could do from a painting and a staining standpoint. Carpets, you want to be careful with those, right? Like, those also will churn out a ton of VOCs, like styrene and formaldehyde and propanediol and vinyl acetate. And so for carpets, you would want to, and this is what I did in my house was, I almost said hoose, like you,
hoose.
Yeah. You want 100% wool if you're going to do carpets, you know, and there are companies like, you know, Nature's Carpet, for example, I think is the one we used, where they actually just use totally undyed, totally wool carpets. And, you know, of course, even if you're laying the carpet, you would still want to keep all the windows and the doors open and really air out the room, or just plant one of these HEPA air filters like this Air Doctor that I recommended. That, by the way, we get a 50% discount on the Air Doctor with my my special link. We locked that in for all of our listeners once I started kind of promoting their standalone HEPA air filter. So, so get one of those air filters when you're cleaning, one of these Air Doctors, but also, you know, pay attention to the carpet. And then finally, for filtration systems, yeah, you have things like the Air Doctor, but then also, you know, there are a ton of different living fern and palm plants that host microorganisms that feed on volatile organic compounds or plant-based filters. And if you look up the NASA Clean Air Study, what we did was we just identified which plants would grow well in our area of the world, and we added these plants into our home. So if you walk into our house, not only, well, the way we have things, I've got the standalone HEPA air filter in my office, and then we have a central air filter called an Aller Air. That's like a combination of, I believe it's ozone, a negative ion generator, and a HEPA air filter that filters everything that kind of goes through the vents. And then we have all these plants. And then there's a large connection of tinfoil hats when you walk in the door, a collection of tinfoil hats to your left that you can just remove from the coat hook and place on your head to complete the picture. But don't,
and complete your ensemble.
That's right. That's right. So I look into that. And then, of course, you should also look into detox strategies. I mean, this you know, I have a podcast. I'll link to it in the show notes. But it's like 17 different things that I did in 2017 to ensure that I was detoxing my body. And a lot of these little things add up. I mean, it sounds silly, but doing things like you know, like a weekly or a monthly coffee-based enema, or spending time in a sauna a few times a week. You know, I'm in the sauna almost every day these days, just sweating for 20 to 30 minutes, which is great for red blood cell production and growth hormone and collagen and beauty and skin health. But it's also really good for removing toxins through the sweat. You can use things like rebounders or vibration platforms to move lymph and to move blood, and also have a little bit of a detoxification effect. Dry skin brushing, coconut oil pulling. You know, I go into a lot of these techniques in that particular podcast, but ultimately, if you're kind of constantly thinking about how can I clean up my body, how can I sweep out my body, you don't have to do like a 2-week long water fast every year. You're instead just doing like little mild way, you know, little mild methods of detoxifying your body just kind of throughout the year. You know, it's kind of like exercise for me. You're like, I exercise a little bit every day. It's pretty rare I'm going to do a 2 or 3 hour exercise session. You know, I exercise, gosh, like an hour-ish a day, 365 days a year. My body responds really well to that versus, you know, throwing down a really hardcore exercise session every once in a while. Same thing with detoxification. Like, I do little things every day, coconut oil pulling or dry skin brushing or rebounding or sauna, you know, sweating, cold soaks, enemas, things like that to actually help with detoxification. So I would not neglect the cleaning up of your body, even if you are trying to do your home projects in a clean environment. You're still going to get exposed to some stuff. So those are my recommendations for Jason. Brock, did I miss anything?
No, I'm super glad you brought up plants. I'm a huge believer in plants. Like, my office is chock full of bromeliad and dracaena plants, and that's exactly why I have them, is because apparently they suck up 94% of acetone when they did a study in one of those places where the ladies go to get their fingernails done.
Amazing.
It actually sucked up 94% of the acetone in the air. So that's if it does it there, it's going to be good in my
especially
office.
Especially for a guy like you, where's all that fingernail polish?
Yeah, I got to have my mani-pedis.
What's up, guys? This is Benny Gifford from Colorado Springs, and I'm wondering about this idea of peaking for a race where for, I don't know, like 3 or 4 days, you have a lot of sex or you ejaculate a lot through whatever method, and then about 2 or 3 days before it's time to compete, you cut it all off, I don't know, to increase testosterone, or apparently there's a lot of Ayurvedic study around this. So I don't know. I'd like to hear the physiological side of this, if there's been any clinical proof, or I don't know, any reason to actually do it. And Ben, I know you were kind of tampering with this, so let me know if you've found results on that yet.
You know, I actually did think we were going to get through the whole podcast without using the word ejaculation. And Benny just ruined it for
we
us.
Often do, but not today.
Yeah. Yeah. So have you heard about this, about reducing your ejaculatory frequency?
Unfortunately, yes. It seems to be all the rage over the last
Years. What's it called? The retention method? Something like that.
It's got all kinds of crazy names.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I've got like at least seven different friends on Facebook that have invited me to join their like private group for non-ejaculation. I'm just like, come on, guys.
You know what?
Keep it to yourself.
I've done it before where you have sex, you don't ejaculate. And honestly, if this is like a morning sex or midday sex, and then you go out and you like try to hit the gym after, or you do anything physical after, you do feel a little bit stronger. I don't know if it's because you're so freaking frustrated that you didn't get to come.
Exactly.
Or that you retained your chi, as a lot of these kind of, these Taoist or these Ayurvedist principles will teach. But yeah, there's this idea of abstinence being something that may actually allow you to perform better, with the idea being when you ejaculate, you give away a lot of your chi, a lot of your life force energy. And so you have the decision of whether to gift it, shall we say, to someone, or keep it to yourself prior to a big competition. And they've studied this idea of sexual intercourse before competition. Like, there was one study that they did at the University Hospital in Geneva, and they found that sex had zero detrimental influence on the maximum workload achieved or the athlete's mental concentration. However, they did show in this study that the athletes had a higher post-effort heart rate after a maximal stress test on the morning of having sex, meaning if you were going to have sex, you should not do it in the 2 hours prior to your competition. Because I know how many people will wake up before a triathlon that begins at 7 a.m. in the morning, and the first thought that goes through their mind is, I need to have some sex.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I think most athletes are kind of like in and out of the bathroom, the porta potty, and racing around trying to get to the starting line, not trying to get it on. However, don't have sex 2 hours before your competition. That's one thing. There was another study that was a randomized crossover study that showed that sex up to 12 hours prior to an aerobic test had no effects on maximum aerobic power, what's called oxygen pulse. So based on research, there doesn't appear to be a very detrimental effect from having sex like the day before or the night before. But when you look at traditional Chinese medicine, and this view of qi in relation to sex, qi, life force, energy, prana, chakra, whatever you want.
Have you been watching Iron Fist?
I have.
You've been watching Iron Fist.
That and Star Wars. But the daily energy deposit of your qi in traditional Chinese medicine comes from what's called jing, J-I-N-G, jing. And that's the term used for the overall amount of energy that you kind of come into the world with, right? So you're born with this X supply of jing. And every time you spend your qi, you give away a little bit of your jing. And so what traditional Chinese medicine and some of these classic Chinese texts give us are sexual frequency guidelines to ensure that you're not basically draining your jing too quickly. Draining your jing would be a great name for a band, by the way.
I keep my jing in my MeUndies.
Right, exactly. So in traditional Chinese medicine, in men, jing is said to be very potent in your semen, and in women, in their eggs. So every time a man ejaculates, he would lose some jing in the form of millions of sperm, and every time a woman ovulates, she would also lose some jing in the form of a single egg. But in traditional Chinese medicine, like, the male gives a lot more of it away than the female during sex, because the male is ejaculating, and hence this idea that some athletes have, or the superstition that some athletes have, of just like not having sex prior to a race. And it's also a reason that like resting and tapering might work, is because you're just like, you're not draining your chi quite as quickly. I'm not going to deny the fact that we have like this inherent life force and energy that we might not be able to measure, but that is still kind of like seeping through us, and we wouldn't want to drain that too quickly. So you wouldn't want to overtrain prior to a competition. You also wouldn't want to over sex prior to a competition if you were to follow these pieces of advice from traditional Chinese medicine. And I'll put a link in the show notes, but there's actually a table. Like, if you're between the ages of 30 and 40, if you're in good health, you can have sex up to once per day, or ejaculate up to once per day. If nice. You're in average health, you would reduce that to every other day. So you're not draining your, right, your Jing yeah. too quickly.
Not bad.
And okay. then the minimum amount would be every 8 days. At least every 8 days you'd want to ejaculate. But then like between the ages of 40 to 50, it increases every 16 days that you would, that would be the minimum amount you would ejaculate. And then if you're in good health, you wouldn't have sex any more than every 3 days. And if you're in average health, you wouldn't have sex any more than every 4 days, right? So this is all based on the traditional, it's actually a kind of like a famous traditional Chinese medicine classic that really gets into healthy sexual activity. And this is the classic text that a lot of these semen retention protocols are based on. And there are people who have done not only the what's it called? What's the no sex, no porn?
You heard that one? Yeah.
It's got a can't name.
Like, it's called the Tim Ferriss.
Made yeah, he made that popular for a while. But there are also people who practice this semen retention strategy to see how much better their workouts become or how much better they do in say, like a race or something like that. And there's a few other benefits, a few other side benefits. First of all, in tantric sex, semen retention or like kind of like getting yourself just to the edge and then having your partner kind of pinch you or performing like a Kegel type of exercise, you know, which would be like squeezing all the muscles down there, that apparently can assist with increasing, not that any of us have a problem with, shall we say, premature ejaculation or, you know, being what do they call the people who can last about 30 seconds?
16-year-olds.
Yeah, 16-year-olds. There's a name for it when a guy only lasts like 30 seconds in bed. I think it's called is it called a Luke? I think something like that. Anyways,
I've never heard that.
Yeah, I'm sure we could find it on Urban Dictionary. So yeah,
you keep talking. I'll look for it.
A Chase Clark on Emily. I don't know. I'm sure there's a few other phrases for it, but anyway, so there's that. It can assist you with being better at tantric sex. There's a really great book called The Multi-Orgasmic Man that I've read, and basically that book also goes into how to like block your sympathetic nervous system response during sexual activity by experiencing a full orgasm without the emission of any seminal fluid. And that's basically what that book teaches you to do. I have not cracked the code on exactly doing that yet, but a couple of times while experimenting with it, I've accidentally orgasmed without actually ejaculating, and it is very interesting that the body is the male body is able to do that. And you know, there's also this idea, and I think this is not proven by science, but they say an ounce of semen is considered to be equal in value to 60 ounces of blood, right? And so if you were gonna like go wow. compete at altitude, you wouldn't want to give away blood beforehand, right? And so they say that semen might actually also be like draining your blood. I don't think it takes that much blood to produce a little bit of semen. And if anything, the like improvement in your power to weight ratio by getting rid of some of that semen might actually, you know, offset the loss of blood. And I'm just theorizing. That'd be an interesting experiment, actually. Anyways, though, so those are some of the ideas behind semen retention. And then there's the last thing I should say is that there's this this article called Science Discovers the Physiological Value of Continence. And that article says semen contains substances of highly physiological value, especially in relation to the nutrition of the brain and nervous system. And it says there's a remarkable similarity of chemical composition between the semen and the central nervous system, both being especially rich in lecithin, cholesterol, and phosphorus compounds, which would indicate that seminal emissions withdraw from the body substances necessary for the nutrition of nervous tissues, which basically means you're going to get dementia if you ejaculate too much, I think.
Hmm.
Yeah, but none of that is based on science, right? The only science that exists out there shows that basically you just shouldn't have sex 2 hours prior to with competition. And aside from that, you should be good. Now, of course, there's all these external variables, right? Like, I don't know about you, Brock, but when I have sex, sometimes it's accompanied by a couple glasses of wine and staying up, you know, an hour and a half later than I would normally. And so, you know, there's things like that that could detract from your competition just as much as, say, the ejaculation itself. Plus, there's the complete exhaustion of those infamous psoas muscles we were talking about earlier. So there's that. Yeah. Anyways, though, so any luck finding out any other terms that would relate to a premature ejaculation?
I found a horrifyingly long list
Oh, boy. Well,
shall I read some of them?
Let's hear it.
Chow, PME, Gone in 60 Seconds, Quick Shot, Fun Gasket.
Oh.
This is a good one. Dropped Yogurt. I'm going to skip that one. That's upsetting. Bluetooth, Wigsaw, Preemie, Spark Plug, Barf. Nope, not going to read that one. The Sooner Nation, Snuffleupagus. What?
I like Snuffleupagus.
Isn't that the guy from Sesame Street?
Yeah, the big hairy elephant from Sesame Street. All right. Well.
Wad Blower, Come in Handy, Waller Man. Not going to read that one. All Your Bass, Peachy 13. It's really hard editing this on the fly, so I'm going to stop.
Yeah. All right. Well, Benny.
This could get upsetting really quick.
Hopefully that gives you a lot to work with. And I'll put that chart on ejaculation frequency in the show notes, should anybody want to try that. And if you're listening in and you've done a lot of semen retention, leave your thoughts and your experience over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/374, and we can have a fascinating discussion about this. And in the meantime, speaking of blowing your mind, we have a review left for today's show. And this is the part of the show where if you hear your review that you leave in iTunes read on the show, you email gear@greenfieldfitnesssystems.com. That's gear@greenfieldfitnesssystems.com with your t-shirt size. We'll send you a handy dandy Ben Greenfield Fitness Show gear pack with a beanie, a BPA-free water bottle, and an amazing tech t-shirt that you can work out in and look amazing in. So that being said, Brock, you want to take this one away?
I guess I do. The title of this one is Mind and Bowel Blowing. Mm. And it's 5 stars from Leah SH. And it goes like this. The May 3rd, 2017 blew both my mind and my rectum. Mm. Finally, someone offers a scientific approach to health, spirituality, and shitting my pants.
What were we talking about on May 3rd, 2017? I'm guessing it had something to do with like enemas or constipation.
It must have.
Probably. Mind and bowel blowing. All right. Well, Leah, great review. Again, just email and we'll hook you up with a tech t-shirt, a beanie, a water bottle. For the rest of you listening in, we're going to put a link to the calendar in the show notes. All those crazy things I talked about in the introduction, the book by Bob Cooley and the Barefoot book and the Circadia device for sleep and the neuro grips and all that jazz. We'll have that in the show notes. Everywhere I'll be speaking, like the New York City events and the Biohacker Summit in Helsinki, discounts on all that stuff. We'll also give you guys resources for that Egoscue video I mentioned, the books that I mentioned about presenting, some tips on detoxing your home and detoxing your body. And of course, no podcast show notes would be complete without our special chart on ejaculation frequency. So you can check.
Just put that in all of them from now on.
All that out at bengreenfieldfitness.com/374. Brock?
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.